Welcome to the Lab Up Leaders series, a showcase of global change agents and experts in healthcare and laboratory management. Here's your host, Lab Up Global Founder, Robert Farias.
So we're pleased today to be joined by Julia Zamit. Julia, nice to meet you. How are you?
I'm good. As usual, the pandemic is a little bit stressful, but hopefully I have faith that it will get better soon.
Great. Yes, that's we definitely all hope that. So, Julia, let's begin by just introducing your background a little bit from an academic standpoint. Can you tell us the story of your academic journey, please?
Yeah, so maybe it started a little bit before my academic journey, but so I graduated as a veterinarian at the university based in Budapest, which was called the Szent István University. It's quite an old university and it's well accredited. Anyway, actually both my parents are vets as well and did graduate from the same university. So I feel like I'm born and bred a veterinarian. I did have a choice to be something else, even though other people don't believe me, but I really did. So I graduated in Budapest, and after that I worked as a clinician. I did a few internships here and there around the world. I was in Toronto for 3 months and did clinical work there. Otherwise, odd jobs and volunteering as usual. I think most people have very similar backgrounds in that case as when you become a veterinarian. Otherwise, after that, I kind of got fed up as a clinician in Malta a few years ago, and I coincidentally ended up going to Botswana. I got a job as a clinician there as well and started falling in love with different parts of veterinary medicine. So now I'm towards the end of my new master's with the University of Glasgow, and I've done a few odd courses here and there to fill in the gaps, but I've started to move away from clinical work.
So Julia, let's back up just a little bit. So in terms of your veterinary studies, so I understand you did multiple practices and different internships following that graduation. And then your next academic experience, you said, was your current master's. Is that right? And what is that master's in?
In One Health. So it's from the University of Glasgow. It's a master's in One Health. It's run by the veterinary department as well there.
Right. Okay. So let's go back to your professional experiences then. So you had mentioned quite a few different stints and internships and job placements in multiple places. Can you just describe a few of them for us, if you don't mind? So from the time you graduated your veterinary school in Budapest, did you work in Budapest?
I did an internship just outside. Actually, it's on the border of Austria in a place called Szombathely. So I worked in a couple of dairy farms there, just as a follow-up to my veterinary degree. It's just mostly I worked, it was reproductive health, I would say, and obstetrics, as one does in a dairy farm. And I actually really enjoyed dairy work, even though it's I don't find it a sustainable form of farming, the way that it was run. That farm particular, or those farms in that area, because it was definitely intensive farming, but I always enjoyed working in agriculture. My father worked in agriculture when I was young, and I always enjoyed being with him. So that definitely, I had the love for it, but it's very difficult to work in agriculture in Malta. So I did end up doing small animal clinical work here. Following that, I went to Toronto and I worked in a small animal practice there as well, in the, I would say, more pretty central part of Toronto. That was quite interesting because it was first opinion practice again, but the people who ran the clinic, they did really try to, as much as they could, work holistically. And that was a very different way to what I was used to in Malta, because, or in Hungary as well, that the way that they spoke to clients was very different. It wasn't about always maybe throwing antibiotics and anti-inflammatories at a case, but it was, what can we do and how can we actually help the animal? It was a very different holistic approach. And if they could avoid certain treatments, even for expense, it was eye-opening for me, since I was not used to that kind of culture. And I don't think it is maybe typically the way that most clinics are run in Northern America, but they did run their clinic that way. And that was quite nice. I really enjoyed. I also lived with them, so they also eat organic, and they really try to live naturally in the middle of Toronto, which was quite interesting. And I think that was an interesting way of, or a new light of seeing clinical work, and maybe one of the steps on how I started seeing things a little bit differently, how things are more connected than I think sometimes we're taught at university and through society as well. And after that, I did come back to Malta and I did work here. Problem is, in clinical work, I think most clinicians do burn out. I've read a lot about this as I started doing. I failed to mention this, but I did do a module with the Royal Veterinary College, the first module for advanced clinical medicine. And here they actually really talk about mental stress. And that was one of the parts of this module, was really interesting how they talked about how stress and burnout can really affect new graduates. And I found myself really relating to a lot of the scientific articles. And I realized that clinical medicine is probably not for me, because I feel like it fails, or clinicians fail to see the interconnectedness between nature and our pets and us. And I don't think it's necessarily, it's probably the way that we're taught at university, that we're not really taught about this connectivity. Once I started to look more into certain aspects of veterinary medicine, I started to fall a little bit out of clinical work, sadly, and become more of an advocate for environmentalism, which I feel like I always was, and start seeing things a little bit differently. And that's how I started moving. That's why I started my master's as well. And that's why I started networking in different areas of veterinary medicine. And I feel like things have really changed for me in that aspect. Even I'm still a clinician part-time, and even I really try to talk to my clients. And I feel like client education for me has become a very big aspect of my life, when it's not directly connected to One Health, though One Health is, I would imagine, it's a very connected way, if we want to make it that way, I guess.
So before we get too far into the One Health topic, Julia, just to confirm a few more things and sort of finalize a few more details. So from your experience in Toronto, what was the gap between that and your time in Botswana?
I just worked in Malta, so I worked as a clinician here in a small animal practice.
Okay, and so why Botswana?
Well, actually, I have a very good friend and colleague who I was talking to, and kind of we discussed how I really was not enjoying the work here anymore, here as in Malta, and that I needed a change. And she had worked in Botswana already, so I had actually visited her the year before. She worked at the Botswana SPCA, and we connected again, and she was looking at new jobs, and there was a job for two vets in Botswana in general practice this time. So I applied and I actually ended up going for a different job also in Botswana though. And it was more, again, it was general practice in the city of Gaborone, where again, it was, I think most people would say, everyone thinks that it's Southern Africa, you know, it would be wildlife work, but I actually worked mostly, which was still different in general practice. So I did a lot of small ruminant and cattle work as well, which was quite interesting for me again to fall back into the line that I still hadn't completely fallen out of love. So, and it was very eye-opening for me to work with different communities and see how clinical work is so different. You know, people do not have, not everyone I would say, have the same level of, maybe not respect, but animals have a role for them. And it's, you know, even their dog, most dogs are guard dogs as well, so they have a function, they are working dogs. They're so there, and some people have a working dog that guards their house, and there are people who have pet dogs that they keep indoors, and there'll be these small white fluffy dogs that more or less resemble, I would say, a Maltese terrier. And it was interesting for me to see what a big difference there was to how people see animals in Africa, I would say, in Southern Africa anyway, compared to Europe. It was a different level of respect, I would say. There was a lot of education involved in my work, which I really enjoyed. So it was a lot of talking with our clients. I did eventually become a committee member of the Botswana SPCA as well. And then I was a relief vet there as well, because they had a very long time when they didn't have a veterinarian around that worked full time. So I did a lot of emergencies for them. We did outreach, which meant that we did a lot of sterilization campaigns for people who had a lot of stray animals, or had a lot of animals on their property that they didn't know what to do. So that was quite interesting. And that's also involved education around rabies, which I found really interesting, because I had never actually handled any animals with rabies, because Malta is rabies free and Europe is practically rabies free, maybe not on the books, but there's hardly any rabies cases anymore. So to deal with certain diseases that I would say are pretty old diseases, but are very much part of the community there, it was pretty eye-opening. And and you realize what a difference there is between Europe, North America. I mean, I've traveled a lot, but to live within a society and really understand, or try to understand, I would say, the different perspectives of how people see animals and diseases, and how it's so much part of their culture as well, how there are different explanations for certain things, that, for example, certain diseases or manifestations of malnutrition in animals, and how people interpret that. It's so different to what I experienced here, and I learned a lot. I learned a lot, and it was very much part of my journey.
Julia, sorry to interrupt. How long were you in Botswana for?
I was there for 2 years.
For 2 years, okay. And upon completion of Botswana, what were your next steps?
So I took some time off, actually, and then I came back to Malta, and I've worked as a relief vet. It's not really locoming, because I've only worked with this one practice, but I've also done quite a lot of HR and like leadership work here with the same practice. So I don't work full time anymore, but I do a lot of work with the people, with the employees in the practice, which I think is very, very important, because as a practice grows, I feel like a lot of people, and I don't want to generalize, maybe it's not the practice I work in, but I feel like it's even the practices I worked in Botswana, it was the same kind of thing. People get busy, and we forget that our manpower is really, really what runs a business or an NGO. And so I really feel like during the pandemic, seeing the same clinic that I worked in, and then I came back after 2 years, and I could see how the business has grown, but the people felt the atmosphere changed. And I know that that was a lot to do with the pandemic. There are much more pets in Malta. I know that it's the same thing in many cities around Europe. And people are tired. In veterinary medicine, I think it's the same thing. It's the same thing in healthcare systems as well. People are exhausted. And I think it's really important to support staff. And as veterinarians, I think we might not give or show as much respect to our support staff, which would include a receptionist or our assistants or nurses or technicians. They're quite essential. And so this is what I do now. I do a little bit of clinical work. At the moment, I'm doing more than I'm used to, because we do have a lot of cases here in Malta. And a lot of support of staff members, because I really believe in empowerment and trying to, as I said, support the workforce. And this is the same thing that happened in the BSPCA as well. When I was a committee member, there was a lot of challenges because it was a much bigger workforce as well. I think when you have a lot of people working together for a big part of the work week, there's always a lot of drama and a lot of misunderstanding. And I think it can be a very beautiful thing working with a lot of people and managing, but it's also extremely stressful and humbling as well at the same time, when you start talking to people and you realize that a lot of us professionals sometimes have to get off our high horse and really listen to our employees or members of staff. So that's what I do at the moment.
Okay. And so, Julia, the interest in One Health, so obviously you have a slightly more holistic view of things. Sounds like you've had some interest in the environmental side of things for some time anyways. Can you describe the rationale behind One Health? Like, what do you expect to achieve by making the shift to One Health? Obviously, so there's obviously some career interest in moving away from the clinical practice on the veterinary side. But yeah, what do you feel, or what types of areas do you feel will be new to you moving into One Health?
For me, what really interests me is working with communities. Really, really, I think one can sense that I really like to work and understand where people are coming from. But obviously, there is that connection with health and environmental health, which I really, really enjoy. At the moment, what I would like to move into is more sustainable farming and agriculture. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding around that. A lot of people believe that sustainable agriculture is not in line with food security and food safety. And the more I read into it and the more I learn about it and the more networking I do within this community, I think there really is a good scientific basis. It's not what a lot of people think is kind of just an environmentalist point of view or an idealistic point of view. It's actually, there's a lot of scientific basis around sustainable agriculture. And even though policy doesn't necessarily support it, so that is one part that I would really like to fall into. I did a little bit of work this summer with a group called Enovat, which is part of a European cost action. And Enovat is the European network for optimization of veterinary antimicrobial treatments. And that is something that was quite interesting as well, I would say, to fall into. A colleague of mine is part of the cost action and I was sent instead of her, but it was quite interesting to work with microbiologists because this is a group mainly of microbiologists, veterinary microbiologists, but microbiologists, and to be there as a clinician and see how certain ideas, because most of them are researchers, don't actually translate into clinical work to prevent and to, well, to prevent antimicrobial resistance. It was good to be part of that discussion and to see where things have to change in Europe, because this was part of the European cost action, but around the world, really. It's something which I'm going to borrow, but I've heard this many times, especially during the last antimicrobial resistance awareness week. It's really a silent pandemic that is quite scary, to be honest with you. The more I learn about it, it's, I think, through sustainable farming, which I think we can really see the interconnectedness of how things have to change, you know. And I think One Health, if we really start digging deep, we can really see how a lot of these big disciplines are so connected and how we're raising awareness and changing policy is the only way that things have to change around the world. And, you know, I think that's the beauty of it. It's the more that I fall into different small initiatives here and there, the more it just becomes one big blurred discipline at the end of the day. And I really feel as a veterinarian, maybe at university, we already learned quite a lot about, obviously, public health, veterinary public health as well. But maybe this is beyond, not maybe, but it is beyond that. It is really, really trying to understand how we have to start listening to not only one group of professionals, but to everyone who is not necessarily of a scientific capacity, but also the people who are implementing certain initiatives. I think being part of this Enovat, it was quite, it was quite interesting to be part of it, especially because of this, because I could see that a lot of the people do work at universities, and yes, there's the science to back it up, but you know, you start talking to them about how they're going to implement certain treatment protocols, and you know, being a clinician in a small animal practice, I just felt like it's, you know, it's impossible because it's a business, and no vet can actually explain to their client that they have to spend triple on a certain treatment when instead, you know, the vet down the road would just dish out the antibiotics for them, you know. And I've had a couple of clients actually where I've had to really put my foot down and tell them, actually, you know what, I'm not giving you antibiotics for this because there is no rationale. There is no reason for me to give you antibiotics for this. And it's a really tough conversation to have with clients when you're in a business and you know that you might lose them to the vet that is literally 10 minutes down the road and will probably tell them the exact opposite. But as an advocate for more holistic and One Health, I think it's extremely important to start having these conversations, not only with clients, but with people, and having open discussions with lay people as well, with the layman who lives next door, and really, because otherwise I really feel like things won't change very much.
So Julia, let me just pick on something in particular. So mm-hmm. obviously the concept of working with a multidisciplinary team, you had mentioned microbiologists earlier in the context with Enovat, but realistically the One Health paradigm, the overall paradigm, and as you mentioned, it does kind of, we look at it as getting all blurred, but in essence what it's trying to do is connect some dots that have been there for many years, just haven't been implemented in a way where it's synchronous across the board, right? So as you mentioned, not overdoing the antibiotics in animals, and that permeating through the system, and then antimicrobial resistance obviously is being one of the biggest things that One Health can help contribute to, I think, as a longer term goal. But do you see perhaps that there's a connectedness there on the ability to work with multiple staff and the interest in One Health? Because in essence, my brief discussions with several people in the One Health space generally tend to be collaborative of nature, generally tend to be a little less connected to the title and role of clinician, or whether it be physician or microbiologist, any of the different roles, right? You tend to be a bit more connected to and respecting the impact that others can contribute to the decisions as well. Do you find that that's something that's maybe driven you to One Health as well? Is that interest in, you know, you mentioned earlier today, the interest in understanding other people, listening to different roles within the veterinary practice. Is that also part of your trigger to focus on One Health?
Yes, of course. It's very much part of it. I feel like a lot of the time, these, maybe not titles, but these disciplines, we tend to get really fixated. That's what I'm giving off as well, but the fixated on a word, on a discipline, when, as you said, everything is interconnected at the end of the day. You know, I think it's also really important. I've listened to a a really interesting podcast, and he by this guy, I'll just tell you his name,
please.
Craig Stephen, and I found it really interesting because what he discussed in this particular podcast, but I do follow him very much, is how it's really important for not only discussions but also implementation of One Health research, because what he also really spoke about is that we can talk about conservation, we can talk about global health, we can put many of these ideas under different disciplines at the end of the day. You know, we can talk about environmental health and everything is a little bit blurry, but at the end of the day, if we don't implement any of these ideas that we're talking about, it's just a name. And it's the same thing with anything, really. For me, I would say under One Health, it's what I believe it's very much advocacy. So talking to people, understanding, really trying to get to the root of the problem, you know, because at the end of the day, trying to create change, there's no point if people don't understand where you are coming from, if you do not understand where they're coming from, and no one is going to change if they feel like, or they feel like, I'm a vet, I'm trying to tell them what to do, but I'm not understanding them. You know, going, for example, working with a farmer and trying to make them understand that we cannot sell them any more antibiotics because certain antibiotics are not working for example, bovine diarrhea, when you get coughs and they're young and we have this diarrhea that is there for weeks, and at the end of the day they're just injecting them with antibiotics and there's absolutely no point. It's all about management, and me going there to a farm and enforcing that I can't give them antibiotics but not actually implementing any kind of understanding, it's literally a farmer is just going to think that this vet has to get off their high horse, and yeah, and this is the thing that when I say that it's really humbling, actually trying to see where the problem lies. Most of the time when we talk to people in any sector, it doesn't need to be a farmer, it can be someone in conservation, someone who poaches, who we have a lot of hunters here in Malta. When you start actually discussing the root of the problem, people really open up. And I think this is one of the issues in any sector, is that we try to change things from the top, but we don't actually understand what is going on within society or why people are doing certain things. And most of the time, if you do try to understand them, a lot of things can actually change. So this is, for me anyway, I really feel like working with people is where I can make a difference. So obviously, being an advocate for One Health, you have to understand the science behind it. You have to be able to educate someone properly. But at the same time, you have to be able to be approachable. And I think that is something that as maybe a woman, someone young, all right, I feel like I'm young, it's easier to be approachable. And obviously sitting there and listening and actively listening to where people have an issue with certain changes.
So Julia, just to put a bow on some of this, and we've talked about One Health in a variety of areas and terms here. And obviously I think you have a lean as well to the animal health overall. And I think the idea of also animal well-being, if I add that to it.
Yes.
can we talk briefly about the impact of you not issuing antibiotics in a farming practice, and what that has to do on the human health side, and how that translates into a larger area of issues for people in general. So can you talk to that briefly, please?
Yeah. So really, really, I feel like a lot of the issues in agriculture are mainly, I mean, obviously not always, but mainly are all issues around management. If we're talking about animal management and how we keep, or how people keep their livestock, a lot of the issues can not change, but can be, I would say, decreased because we're changing how we keep an animal, on what medium they're standing, how much ventilation there is in an area. So if we really start, we can really start comparing here with COVID as well. You know, we always talk about ventilation to reduce COVID cases. This is also the same thing with animals as well. Ventilation is a very big part of decreasing spread of diseases as well. We can also talk about what food we're feeding them, for example, with ruminants, how much fiber and carbohydrates, and you know, it makes a very big difference to the overall health of an animal. So once we start talking about management with farmers, and a lot of these issues, they don't need antibiotics. And this is one of the biggest problems with industrial farming, I feel, is that once we start industrializing farms, then we're gonna continue having this issue with antimicrobial resistance. I mean, one of the biggest issues is when there's a lack of control, a lot of farmers, they inject their animals with many different antibiotics, and a lot of the time there isn't a lot of control from the veterinary side. There's a big problem with antibiotics being dispensed without prescription. So that is one of the big issues here. So there's no veterinary control whatsoever. Then there is a discussion with certain vets who just, I don't want to generalize, but there are a couple of vets that obviously would find it easier to just treat the whole head rather than actually going down to basics and seeing where the problem is. So again, welfare and management. Then we have to talk about antimicrobials leaching into the environment and obviously into our food, because all these animals, agriculture at the end of the day is all about food. And yes, it's actually quite sad to see how many traces of antimicrobials there are still found in food, even though we really try to implement withdrawal periods with antimicrobial use or with anti-inflammatory uses as well. But I really feel like there's a lot of lack of understanding, because I don't think it's really lack of education. It's really, really getting down to the root issue and a lack of wanting to understand. So yeah, and then obviously I think most people have heard of antimicrobial resistance, but I mean, I've heard some, it's absolutely scary. I've heard of people who go into anaphylactic shock because they're eating a piece of steak that they bought in Malta and or in Europe, and they've obviously, there is penicillin in the steak, and it's enough to create an allergic reaction within them. And I think that it's not just traces anymore of antimicrobials. Sometimes it's actually, there's enough for people to get reactions just by eating a piece of meat. It's the same thing in fruit and veg. I feel with pesticides as well that are just leaking into the ground. So it's a scary business, antimicrobials. And I think more and more we don't really talk about it, but I know of a very good friend of mine as well who almost died of MRSA because he got COVID, and because he was on a ventilator, he almost died. A very healthy 40-year-old almost died of MRSA at hospital because he got a very resistant Staphylococcus aureus just by being in hospital. And I think that just goes to show that everyone, not only us veterinarians, but even humans, we in public health really need to start going down to basics now and actually realizing if we really do need to be using all these antimicrobials in healthcare. Because I'm not even sure sometimes if people understand how bad the situation is anymore.
So Juliet, help me understand then. So for suggestions that you have for people who are newly exploring One Health, any resources, or you had mentioned the podcast earlier from Craig Steven, any other resources or training tools or guides that you would suggest to people to take a look at?
Yeah, there are loads. which one that I found, I found so many, but I definitely would say that the International Student One Health Alliance, so ISOHA, their website is extremely, there's a list of very good networks and how to really start getting into One Health. So it's about One Health clubs and other alliances as well, and what are the like mentorships as well. I listen to a lot of podcasts through the Public Health Insight, which is actually an Instagram page. And I do follow, for example, One Health Lessons by Dr. Deborah Thompson as well, who has some interesting ideas around education as well. And I really like the way that she's put together this One Health Lessons, because what her idea is very much maybe we're on the same belief as well, but I really feel connected to her in this way. It's a lot to do with advocacy and education. So I feel I really like to follow her as well and what she talks about. She's also a veterinarian. I also, since obviously we're talking about sustainable farming, I do follow a lot in that direction as well. So that means that I read a lot from, there's a group from the Netherlands, the Natural Livestock Farming. So they very much talk about the sustainable agriculture again and how to use holistic medicine. And there's also a whole idea around ethno-veterinary medicine, which maybe we don't have enough time for to talk about, but it's very much what I feel like we might have to start moving into.
I think what we'll do is we'll actually make sure that we have a list of links to several of these services and tools that you're referring to.
Yeah, definitely. I have a lot. I read a lot.
that's great. I think we'll follow up on those as well. And have them as linked as part of this episode. So Julia, just on a final note here, we'd like to offer our guests a chance to say thank you to any mentors or people who've helped them along their journey. So in your case, anybody particularly you'd like to say thank you to?
I would say that I'd really like to say thank you to my colleague, Nayantara Gokhte, who got me out of my rot in clinical medicine, and I think she really helped me to get into One Health. Her mother is Nitya Gote, who runs Antra, which is an organization that is very much around One Health as well. She's a big advocate of that in India. I would say my parents, since they are veterinarians, and they definitely have helped me along my journey. And my professors from Glasgow University, who are Professor Mark Roberts and Dr. Christina Nauda. So I would really like to thank them for always being very supportive.
That's great, Julia. So thank you for that. And thank you for sharing your insights and your story. And we look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
To make a suggestion of someone that would make a great guest or topic you would like to hear more about, please visit us at labop.org. That's labopp.org.